Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Good evening, everyone. This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by KBA. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control for tonight's session is Mike, KD0CDQ, located in Kansas. Backup NCS is myself, Sarah, KC4TXG, and I'm in North Carolina. This is the Thursday Night Thematic Open Forum, or TNT for short. Tonight's program is on Skywarn, and we have an excellent individual here who is very much into emergency activities, and that's Mike, KD0CDQ. Mike, good evening to you. Welcome aboard. Thank you for doing the net tonight.
Thank you, Sarah. This is KD0CDQ, Mike. Skywarn. Skywarn sounds like a big word. Skywarn is a big thing. Skywarn, it can be kind of complicated. All over the nation, the National Weather Service keeps track locally of what's happening. Let's put it that way. And Skywarn is kind of the umbrella organization, but in various counties in the various states across the country, different agencies, different groups of amateur radio operators get the privilege of working along with Skywarn with their feet on the ground, shall I say, boots on the ground. And out here in Kansas, it happens to be an emergency communication service. And specifically in the county I'm in, it's Johnson County, which is a suburb of Kansas City, Missouri, about 23 miles southwest of Kansas City, Missouri, but on the Kansas side. So this emergency communication service is the Skywarn for our area. And I've had people that have scanners and say, you know, when there's a storm, I listen to Skywarn, but I don't hear anything. So I have to redirect them to different frequencies. See, I tell them, you got to get on our frequency. We're active. We're active every time, pre-storm, during the storm, and after the storm. So that's according to where you live. I would suggest if you just put Skywarn on your Google search or any engine and look for your county and see who provides the Skywarn coverage in your area, I think you could find some frequencies that you could listen to. I know there's one in Daytona, Gordon, where y'all are located, because I looked it up just to get a feel for that. Okay, so Skywarn. I've sent notes out to some of the leadership of SCARS, which is South Coast Amateur Radio Service, and it might have been kind of sparse. And again, I mentioned that Kansas Emergency Communication Service, we use the call sign out here, Kilo Zero Echo Charlie Sierra, K0ECS. And we're the ones that get called out as soon as the Weather Service puts out the call for spotters on the ground in our county. And I was going to open with a quick little four-line reading. ECS is the appointed RACES, you're all familiar with the Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, organization for Johnson County Emergency Management and Homeland Security. We're a volunteer organization that provides a service to local government. As a spotter during severe weather events, ECS verifies and reports ground truth information, catch that, ground truth information, from Johnson County Emergency Management and the National Weather Service. I just wanted to read that to let you know where we fit in, and every major county fits in the same way. We have a lot of regulations coming out of FEMA nowadays, which those of us that are a bit older get kind of flustered because they come out with all these courses we have to take. Well, I'll discuss a little bit of that this evening. Now, a neat thing about weather is everybody talks about it, but few people do anything about it. Well, as hams, we have opportunity to not only talk about it, but get our feet wet, literally. The National Weather Service each year provides weather training in various counties. Now, because of financial situations, they've cut it back quite a bit, so some counties have been joined together as a uniform group. Now, we had ours at the local community college, where the Weather Service actually sends out one of the real meteorologists, you know, real flesh and blood guy that can speak English, and he comes and gives us a fine presentation. And they gave us one of those auditoriums at the community college, you know, like a big pit where the speaker's down in the bottom and everybody's up there in a great big circle. And it was close to 200 people there. Now, they weren't all storm spotters. Some civilians got in there as well. Now, what happened? Because they have to cut back financially, the Weather Service, they put out a notice on radio and in local newspapers and television that in our county there would be but one Skywarn training. And so that's why even little kids showed up. It was pretty neat. It's always neat to see a dad who's stuck, you know, with the kids for the night, and he brings the kids on in there into a big auditorium setting like this to just listen in. The biggest listeners, of course, were the weather spotters, because this was our only annual chance to get the training directly from the Weather Service. It's not that the weather changes so much every year. It's that the meteorologists have a way of meteorology speak, and they have ways of clarifying things that are going on locally and nationally. And they have the greatest slides and the greatest PowerPoint, well, not PowerPoints, they're actually videos. Anytime any storm chaser gets hold of a good videotape, whether he works for a television station or whether he's a freelancer or a university kid, they send him into the Weather Service for recognition. So we get to see these not-for-circulation videos that are taken by people just like us, but people that are silly enough to stand there when they're in the middle of a tornado. They're right in the middle of the sucker, and they're taking pictures. It's rolling. We wouldn't have that much sense. We'd be heading the other way. With our training, we are warned if we're that close to a storm, start heading southeast, drive out of it, get away. But a lot of these folks drive right through these things. So at this training, we go over things like that from the Weather Service. But that's only part of our training. It's actually a two-part training. The first part is from the National Weather Service, in which we have to take an examination online in order to get our recertification. That's the word. We'll keep using that right word, recertification. But the second part of that is actually the ham radio operator training. We have protocols that we have to follow. Of course, we have the radio discipline. We have the response disciplines. And because we are listened to by many, probably all, radio and television stations are listening in to whatever we say. And so we have to be very guarded in how we say things, because they have a way of twisting things around. If anybody has any questions on that, come on aboard. This is KD0CDQ.
Six vectors, sir. I had to defend my honor. Over.
Mr. CBS, go right ahead and defend your honor.
Hey, thanks, Mike. KY6V here. You know, and we did and we didn't monitor those frequencies from time to time, but we appreciated everything you were doing. I would like to ask you at this juncture, what equipment did you need to carry with you as a spotter, sir?
This is KD0CDQ. Gordon must be looking over my shoulder, because as he asked the question, the book I have open, I'm right to the page. What, as storm spotters, what equipment are we required to have, or what's our requirements? You must be 18 years of age, because that's for insurance purposes. We don't want any young children out there. You must hold at least a technician class radio license. You must pass a written weather test and county protocols test. That's every 2 years required. So we can skip a year of our training, but as things would have it, I take it every year for fear of 1 year something may turn up and I can't make the training. So I just take it every year as a habit. Okay, going from there, we must attend county protocol training. It says here every 2 years, but our protocol training, it just pops up now and again. Different training comes up. We must have certificates from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, courses, and the course numbers are course number 100, 200, 700, 800, and 704. Those are required, and they have another list of optionals. And we must pass a criminal background check. And our radio, now this is the technical part that Gordon is probably getting at. We have to have a minimum output of 25 watts. That's pretty modest. and an externally mounted quarter wave antenna. So basically, you've got to have at least 25 watts with a quarter wave antenna, but most of us have more than that because we are spread out, which will come up a little later, in different parts of the county, and we have to be able to communicate. So I not only have the mobile unit in my car, and it runs at 55 watts, and I also have the quarter wave antenna, and I also carry an HT with a mag mount antenna just in case I lose my primary. And we have other backups. We also use, excuse me, cell phone backup in case we find that we're out on our own.
How about weather measuring equipment? What are you required to have, sir? Over.
Cabela's. Places like Cabela's are good places to find the anemometers. It gives you wind speed, current, and max. And it gives you temperature, current, and max, and minimum. And I do carry one of those with me. Some fellows have the little cups on the roof of their car that spin and give them that kind of information. The one I have is a handheld. And I found when it's raining, I don't find any cats and dogs, but when it's raining real bad and you're reaching your arm out the window to get this animator to work, it's kind of awkward. It's not too good a situation, but that's what you have to do. I do use a handheld animator, and we have basic things to call in, which I'll tell you a little later, what we consider emergency and what we consider urgent. There's two different categories. Other than those two categories, we stay quiet. The reason we stay quiet will come up a little later as well. Now, in our follow-up training that we had, I mentioned part of it is weather training and the other part is ham radio training. That we had on February 17th, you know, a few days later for our recertification, and I'm looking through the newsletter that I write to see if there's anything interesting that I could tell you about it. I could tell you that the room was packed. In our county, as probably many major counties, a lot of people are very interested in volunteerism. It's very strong here in the Midwest, and with volunteerism with a point to it, like weather spotting. So people put themselves out. They take the classes, they take the training, and they take the chance of being out in a hail situation or in a very hellacious situation with their vehicles. We just do that on our own. We got some coverage, but nothing, you know. We have to rely on our own insurance policies for that kind of coverage. Now, when we had the training, it's an open forum situation where questions can be asked. And the main question this year is many of us are very concerned about the federal government, FEMA, requiring these various courses that we have to take and be certified in. So there are some people that, something I always remembered, there are people who are able and there's people who are available. People who are able will have all kind of certifications for everything you could think of. But people that are available are scarce. And to get ham operators that are willing to leave their homes in these stormy conditions, they are available, but we still have to have the same requirements, all of these requirements, that the same as the people that are more highly qualified. That's okay. It's all kind of nuts, and I guess that's the kind of coconuts we are. Anybody have a comment on that? This is KD0CDQ.
I'm just trying to get clarified here on this equipment. I would suspect that you need something to give weather, wind, direction, velocity. I would assume that you would need to have something that would give you barometric pressure, most possibly. Would you care to explain that a little bit? And thank you, Mike. KY6V, over.
This is KD0CDQ. Yeah, I'll go right to that. Again, I have the anemometer, and that gives me the wind speed, and it gives me also have the temperature. We don't give the barometer reading, but we do give rainfall. And the rainfall is strictly by like a cup or outside your car or just by sighting the storm, how heavy the rain is. But what we get into is the only things that we report, because, again, the radio, TV is listening in. People with scanners can listen if they know our frequency. And we don't want to get people alarmed. So if something is urgent, now we have 28 spotter locations in our county, 28. Now, we don't man all 28. We get in front of the storm if it's usually from the southwest in this part of the country. So we kind of run a rim in the southwest. I'll tell you how we get called out for that, but urgent. If we have an urgent message, what it would refer to is hail 1 inch or larger. We just let them know the largest chunk of hail that we find, 1 inch or larger. Wind speed of 58 miles per hour or greater. So if it's below 58, we just hush. We don't say anything. And the rainfall at 1 inch per hour. That's mainly a guesstimate, but you can kind of tell what's going on there. And we need to let them know if there's descending clouds that are rotating, you know, any basic rotation that's beginning. And as far as the hail size, we give it in increments of coin size or various sports ball, like a tennis ball or a basketball. We give them the size in those. We don't give them in marbles. We never mention anything like that because that's very deceptive. So we would get on the air. Basically, you would say net control Delta 7. Delta 7 happens to be the nearest spotter location to my home. And they would respond, go ahead, Delta 7. And I would say, urgent. And then I would tell them what I have to say. But I don't blurt it out. I wait. Net control, of course, controls when I get on the air and gives me the space. Now, if an emergency call, I would do the same thing. I would say, net control, Delta 7 emergency. And they'd come back, go ahead, Delta 7 emergency. And what I would come back with is either I see a tornado. Now, it's not that somebody drove by and told me they saw one. It's not that I suspect there's one. I actually see the rotation hit the ground and see the debris going up. So I actually see a tornado, or I see a funnel cloud lowering, you know, rotating cloud lowering, actually just about to get to the ground, or I see a wall cloud. A wall cloud is just that. From left to right, you look across, and there's a big, fat, one big cloud, and it's a total wall across you. And what I have to give them is, these are guesstimates. I have to tell them the diameter of at the base, the direction of travel. I do use a good old Boy Scout compass in my car, and I always recommend that guys carry compasses. Don't allow for the one that you may have built in your car, because I found out that there's so much electronics in a dashboard that I have to keep that compass away from the front dashboard to get a true reading. So I tell them the direction of travel of the funnel cloud or the tornado and the speed. Again, that's just a guess. All you can do is guess on the ground. So a lot of it is from the training that the Weather Service gives us, how to estimate a speed of a cloud as it goes by. You know, we can't tell how far away it is, really. So a lot of this is guesstimate. That's why the Weather Service gives us special frequencies to be on, so that general public isn't hearing this. We don't want to panic anyone. We have so much technology today, but the National Weather Service, those big dishes, those big, gigantic tennis balls that you see with the radar inside, they have to stay above 1 degree off the horizon. They cannot shoot at the horizon because, especially here in the Midwest, there's livestock and there's actually live people, believe it or not. So they have to keep their angle at 1 degree off the surface. So by the time it gets to where I live, about 25 miles from the big dish, they are as high as 3,000 feet. So when they're as high as 3,000 feet or more with the dish rotating, they don't know what's happening down below. They can get ideas from looking at their weather, you know, the different colors of the weather map as we all see on television, but they don't really know what's happening on surface. So we're giving them the surface reading down below. And often the Weather Service will directly, like they'll call Echo 3, they'll call directly a weather spotter Echo 3, and they ask you, what are you seeing now? Well, what are you seeing to your southwest? And they listen for you. And then when you give them, if you see something or you don't see something, they know where we're located, the 28 locations or as many of us that are out there. And they will kind of ask different stations, what are you seeing there? What are you seeing here? They're kind of doing a mental map of what's going on down below this cloud formation. Because they're not going to, the local governments are not going to throw those tornado sirens on until they have a definite call. They don't want to panic people. You know, people get panicked so easily. The local municipalities all have the switches, various switches to put on these sirens, but they're listening to the weather spotters and the weather service reports before they'll throw a switch. They're very cognizant of people becoming, you know, like the boy with the finger in the dike. They don't want to be shooting those sirens off too early, and there's always the fear of shooting off too late. And I can tell you that in Joplin, Missouri, we had that storm last year. It was wrapped in a thunderstorm, so it was not seen. No spotters saw that storm, and the reason was it was in a storm. It was in a big, heavy rainstorm. So nobody saw the tornadoes coming down, but they sure found out when it hit the ground. But they did. One weather service operator in Springfield, Missouri, took a chance of a lifetime, and he gave it a call. He actually gave them about an 18, 20-minute warning. He saw something on his scope in Springfield, and he put it on the air. And he did the right thing. He could have hurt his career by making that call, but he did the right thing and at least gave him a 12, 18-minute or so warning. I'll use the word civilian. I don't know. Just use that word. If a citizen was to call the weather service either over a ham radio or on the telephone or texting, whatever, they would probably make note in their log. I say probably because I don't know. They probably make note in their log, but they will not distribute the information. But the way they do it is if a citizen calls in and says they think they see a tornado or the hail is tennis ball size, that is when the weather service goes direct to the local spotter, and they call to us as spotters and say, "What do you see?" They don't tell us. They don't tell us a citizen has seen a golf ball size hail. They don't tell us what they've seen. They will ask us, "What do you have at your location?" Because all we can report is what we see, not what anybody tells us. Now, I'll say that again. We have to actually see something. And if we don't see the hail that the citizen saw, we say, well, there's nothing unusual, no emergencies or no urgence at this time. But that's a bright star for ham radio operators that they accept us as being acceptable people, that we're only going to give them what we're supposed to, only what we see. We're not going to make anything up. They have a lot of respect in us, and therefore we have a lot of respect in the National Weather Service, and we're very guarded. We don't tell them anything that's not to be broadcast. Matter of fact, last year, my wife and I were sitting watching TV around 9 o'clock or so, and we felt the whole house shake. Very odd, because we've been living in this home for 25 years and never did that before. And then within a few moments on television, there was an earthquake in Oklahoma. Interesting, when they said the time of the earthquake in Oklahoma, and I'm up here in northeastern Kansas, you know, a number of hundreds of miles away, it just took a matter of minutes for that vibration in the earth to come up here from, I don't recall exactly where in Oklahoma at this point, but for that vibration to come up from Oklahoma was just a matter of a few minutes, and we felt that vibration up here. So it's interesting how things can happen. But again, the Weather Service let that out, that there was an earthquake in Oklahoma, and so the television stations put the scrawl across the bottom about. And then the following night we had the same thing, but it was lighter. So we've had two earthquakes that were strong enough to feel from hundreds of miles away here as well. But the tornadoes are scary because they're immediate. You don't get any kind of warning of any kind in that as well.
Tell me, how do you become involved in this training?
I would get on just Skywarn, just put Skywarn in Google and get on there and see what they have there. And another way would be get in touch with the better ham radio clubs in your area and ask them, either through email, you know, you can find out where they are, maybe just email them. Do you get involved with storm spotting? And if they do, ask them who the representative is. How did I get? I got into it through the club that I'm a member of. This club is very active in emergency communication, and the training is normally given once a year. In this area, they do it in January. That's supposed to be the quietest time of the year, so we have it early in the year to get out of the way. It'll vary in different counties. But in your case, it would be the hurricanes mainly that they would be working with. So your season starts there in September. But I'm going to say this. Tornadoes have no season. They're year-round. And hurricanes have a bit of a season. The training is actually interesting. The county I'm in is about 350,000 people. It's a pretty populous county, and it's also a pretty educated county. And so what they're doing is they're following FEMA's just like it's a drumbeat. They got to follow it. We actually have four different levels of amateur radio operators under the Storm Spotter umbrella. And type one is the top. I'm a type three. To get to be a type one and two, I got a whole stack of courses here. I'm reading them. I won't read them to you. A stack of courses you got to take to get into a higher level of Storm Spotter. And the higher level you go is more administrative. You're not out in the field anymore. You're more in the centers. Okay. First thing is, when a warning goes out, the emergency management duty officer is activated as net controller. They take turns. Our leadership takes turns, keep monitoring the radar and monitoring the calls from the National Weather Service. We actually have what you call a citywide alert, where when a warning goes out, our telephones ring, our cell phone ring, and our email message is received all at the same time. And it blasts out to all of us simultaneously. And what he's doing when he activates the net, he will get on the frequency that we use, the primary frequency, which is supposed to be confidential, but people learn about it. And he will ask for certified members for their location and availability for assignment as a spotter locator. Now, to be activated, that doesn't mean that you can leave your house in 15 minutes or you can drop off the grandkids with a neighbor. When he asks for your location and your availability, he means you're ready to roll out the driveway or leave your place of work immediately. So when he makes the call for certified spotters and your location and availability, you only answer back if you're ready to roll. In the back of my hatchback, I've got all my cert gear, search and rescue gear that I could ever want. So always in my car, lanterns and flashlights and all that kind of jazz, first aid kits. They're all in my car. But that's not there for the storm spotting, but that's because my vehicle has to be ready to roll. And I don't feel I'm ready to go out storm spotting unless I can not be a part of the problem, that I'm only part of the solution. I don't want to be out there causing any trouble, so I want to be self-sustaining. So when the duty officer calls, now if you're ready, normally out here about 3:30, 4 o'clock is when the tornado warning can show up because of the ground conditions. The sun is rolling pretty hot. About three, that's the end of our heat. 3 o'clock it starts to cool and the planet starts to get active with these tornadoes. Now he'll ask who's ready to respond, and if you are ready, you get on your radio and you say net control. You give your call sign, and he'll ask, are you ready? And he'll put you on a standby list. And that standby list, he also asks you, what's your closest spotter location? That doesn't mean you'll go to the closest spotter location. Oftentimes, it doesn't mean that. But he wants to know. That way, he can tell pretty much where you are located to get started. And the duty officer or the net controller that he has working while he's getting his things together is making up the list of what spotter locations they need covered. And when they call back to you, they will just call back, and like I said, net control to KD0 CDQ, and you come back and they say deploy Delta 7, and you come back Delta 7 deploying. And when you come back and you say you're going to Alpha 3, wherever he tells you to go, when you tell him you're going, that means you got your keys in the hand and you're getting down to the car and you're leaving the house. You go out immediately and you go to the pre-prescribed locations. We have the list of 28 spotter locations. We have these Google Earth pictures of it too, so we know how we should be located at that particular site. We have four different quadrants that we operate from, and each quadrant has a safety officer. There'll be a cruising person, a person that's quite experienced in storm spotting, who cruises from location to location to make sure everything's copacetic, everybody's in good shape out there. When we're on the spotter locations, as I mentioned earlier, we only transmit if we have an urgent or an emergency information to provide. Now, the police normally come by because the highway patrol is nowhere we're located, and they'll often run a circuit just to come through to make sure you're okay, because we do have to watch out for visitors. If we have a visitor at our site, we immediately have to call in to the net controller and tell them we have a visitor and give them any information we have, color of the car, how many people, whatever, because it's not very safe for us to be out there in the evening as we are on these roadsides spotting weather. Some people are very innocent. They just want to know what's going on because they know we're spotters. We've got markings on our vehicles. We do have these what they call confidential frequencies, but they're open. We don't own any frequencies. We have a list of confidential frequencies that we use, and I'm going to say roughly, I'm looking at 29 of them right here, 29 on the 2-meter band on the 440. I got another 10. So if I had any trouble, I could go over to another frequency, but I'd have to let Net Control know because they need to follow me, right? Now, if my radio was to fail out there in the field, that's when I would use a cell phone and I'd call into emergency management center and tell them that my phone is my radio is inoperative, to let them know, and then they would send another spotter out. Is what they'll do. Someone will take it over. Usually, the safety officer will jump in there quickly and come in and while you're waiting for someone to respond, because as you know, with tornadoes, they're very quick. They drop fast. And we have to have these sites covered. So we don't leave the site until we're relieved. Sometimes, like I mentioned, being out there past midnight, sometimes it gets kind of, it's so dark you can't see anything anyhow, but you stay there because they may have a question for you. And at least when there's lightning, you can see the sky formation. You get a little bit of a looky-loo at the sky where every time there's a flash, you kind of get a feel of the cloud movement. But they do have to have people on the ground. And we don't quit our station until we're told, and then when we get home, we tell them we're destinated. That's the word they use out here. When they get back home, they're destinated. That means we're off the insurance and we're back home safely. But the net control does not leave the air until every spotter is back home. So it's a pretty tight system out here. We don't want to lose anybody. And we know that many things can happen when we're out here alone, as we are. I mentioned markings. We have these magnetic signs we put on our car. I also have a yellow flashing light that I can use. If I'm along a busy road, when the traffic's spitting by at 70, 80 miles an hour, I might have my yellow beacon going so people don't, you know, and people tend to drive where they're looking. I don't want them to look at my light, but I want them to know there's a vehicle sitting there. So we do all we can to protect ourselves out there and to identify ourselves. And as Rick said in Maryland, we do have badges. We are badged. We have to get new badges about every other year as well. So we have our identification, so when the highway patrol comes by or the local police, we have our badges we can show so they know what you're doing sitting out there on the roadside in the night. This is KD0CDQ. We also do drills with the county mental health. You know, looking towards the days of pandemics, something like that may come up, so we train for that as well. I may have told you before, we have 52 hospitals in the Kansas City area that are tied together. Each have two ham radios. They use the Yaesu 8900s and 8800s. So we have radio rooms in 52 hospitals, and we man those as well. And to have that too, we have to have this training. So there's no end to the training, and there's no end to people wanting freebies. Now the health department has learned that the ham radio operators are for free. They're all smiles now. And they're using us as emergency communicators in the hospitals, as well as being storm spotters in the field. And they're looking for more opportunities for us to serve. But we have a good Aries group here, but I can't tell you the number. Nobody tells me the number, but we have meetings. And we're actually, on Tuesday night, we're having we call it a night drill. Once a year we do a night drill, simulating an airplane crash, something like that. And we're out in the field in the open wilderness as we have out here. We use a state park that's 300 acres, and we go out in the state park in the evening after sundown, and we go out looking for objects that are put out there, supposed to be people or whatever, the black box, all that stuff. And that's all on our own. Family comes first. If you can't make it out to do the storm spotting or work for the health department or do these nighttime drills, that's all right. But the family should come first, and that's something I try to stress, but I don't know that everybody has that in mind. The reason they give us for the certification and the badges have identification levels on it, type levels, is they say that we can be sent to any part of the country, and in another jurisdiction, they can read our badge and know where we stand, our training-wise. In Joplin, Missouri, when we had that terrible tornado event, I responded with the Saturn, the Salvation Army, and the Salvation Army wanted 18 radio operators for a 24-hour period for 15 days. And to get that kind of commitment, they put the blast out that they needed ham radio operators, and they came from Chicago, Tennessee, you know, you name the places that are distant from Missouri. They came from all over. They had a badging machine down there at the Salvation Army headquarters in Joplin, and they had people sitting in front of the screen popping out ID badges one after the other as a ham would appear from wherever he came from. They didn't care. As long as he had a license, they took his picture, gave him a badge, and gave him a halyard to put the badge in, and they sent him out. So you're right. When the rubber meets the road and a ham operator shows up ready to volunteer, he'll get his picture on a little piece of plastic, and he'll get a halyard to put around his neck, and a ball cap and a T-shirt, too, a ball cap and a T-shirt, and they'll put him on a canteen truck, or they'll put him out at a relief station somewhere and put him to work. When it really gets down there, they will take any licensed ham they can get hold of and put him in the field. But we got the job done. We got the ham radio operators they wanted. We got the job done. This is KD0CDQ. Back to anyone with a comment.
Six Victor on that, sir. You know, back in, I guess, the latest big fatality that I was involved in was 1992 with Hurricane Andrew in Miami. It was devastating. Mike, I mean, it just cleared one portal to the other side of the portal. We had no police communication. We had no fire communication. We had all towers down in the local area. And the hams moved in, took over. We even coordinated the National Guard coming into Miami. Now, none of these guys that were participating in this were certified, but they were seasoned. I will say that I was not controlled for quite a bit of this, and these guys just did one hellacious job.
I think we're all preaching to the choir here. Yes, indeed. But we still go out there and volunteer. The same people that go out as ham radio operators for storm spotting are the same ones that are going out for a health department, going out for the Salvation Army, going out for the Red Cross. This is all the same guys, but they count us in great number because they count us in many different ways. Actually, when this county purchased these new, Motorola has a new, 700 megahertz radios, these new radios that are supposed to be the answer to the problem of 9/11, that they can communicate. They bought these 700, I think they're, maybe it's 700 kilohertz, I don't know what they're, these radios that cost $2,500 a piece, $2,500 for these radios. They give us these radios when we do the drills with the hospitals. The county owns 75 of these radios. So they hand you this radio that's $2,500 plus the programming is more that's in them, and you go out to the hospital and you compare its operation to the Yaesu 88s and the 8900s to see what's doing the best. And between the three, they're all doing the same thing. But our little radios, you know, how much does a Yaesu cost? But they're going over to these Motorolas. And our police department and our fire departments out here are all using these new 700, megahertz, kilohertz are their radios. And so on my scanner, I can't pick them up anymore. But all the police and firemen are running around with these new heavy-duty, high-expensive radios because that's the prescribed thing to have. Although our 2 meters, our 440s, work just as well, same distance, the whole thing. Even down to these new radios, I'm sure they're superior in some way, but they're, as far as distance and clarity and operation, these 700 megahertz radios that are quite expensive are the same as going over to the local, we call it the candy store, going to the local radio shop and picking up a Yaesu or a ICOM or anything like that. They work just as well.
But, Mike, I'm more or less setting my equipment up here, you know, the availability of this All-Star. If I want to go D-Star, I've got that availability. If I want to go IRLP node, I've got that ability. You know, I've got more than enough power here to keep it going on the 70 centimeters, 2 meters, also HF. I've got enough stuff here to keep something going there. And same thing, you know, when I worked emergency and rescue, the people that reached out and grabbed and wanted my help, they didn't ask me if I was certified. They wanted help, and that's the way I grew up there. You know, somebody needs help there, they don't ask you for certificates. You do what you know how to do until someone comes around that can do better for him. And KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Mike out there in Kansas, KY6B. I just want to say that South Cars and our SCARS server is available for any time that there's an emergency. All it has to be is stated. The entire network will be turned over to the person stating that emergency and let it progress the way that it goes.
This is KD0CDQ. We truly appreciate that SCARS is open to help in emergencies like that, very much so. KC4TXG, would you like to take this over?
Okay, I can. Thank you, Mike. This is Sarah, KC4TXG. I will like to make a few quick announcements. Tonight's TNT has been an excellent one. We appreciate Mike, KD0CDQ, for doing the net on Skywarn. Lots of very interesting information, and it's been very, very informative. We are always in need of NCSs, administration people, hospitality people. If you have an interest in that area, please be sure to drop us an email at VOIP at VOIPnet.southcars.com. With that, I am going to close the net for this evening. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VOIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Mike, KD0CDQ. We're saying 73s and closing this VOIP session. Thank you all for your participation. It has been an excellent night, Mike, very informative. And come back again, and we'll maybe do another TNT, I hope so. Everyone have a good evening. Have a good weekend. And with that, this net is closed, and I will return the server to general amateur use. Good night, everyone. KC4TXG, Claire.